You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Today in the Grave Talks, Journey with the Dead, a conversation with Mary Thomas. It all started in her family home as a little girl. Shadow figure darting past her long enough to let her know she was not alone. This is how it all started for Mary Thomas and her journey to understand the paranormal. Throughout her life, she'd be visited by deceased loved ones, hear voices others may not, and at times react to a presence that even she couldn't see, but knew was there. Today we learn about her journey with the dead on the Grave Talks.
The actual experience that I had was actually quite later in life. I had a general interest in the paranormal while I was younger. We had a few experiences at my family home, but I was always a person that was I would believe it when I see it.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until I was probably in my late 20s, early 30s, that I had an experience. I can't really go into the details of it too much now because it was sort of a family member, but they passed away, and I had an experience which really sparked my curiosity and set me on the path that I'm on now. It was a few years back, so around about 2007,
mm-hmm.
that I had the main experience. And from there, I started to watch program called Most Haunted, which I'm not sure if US viewers would know, but I also was watching Taps at the time, which I know they would know more.
Sure. Can you tell me anything more about the experience other than just saying it was an experience? I want to hear the story. And you don't have to name any sort of names or anything like that. I'm just curious as to what went on.
Yeah, so it was quite a profound experience when I was younger. I'll probably give you the first one that happened in my family home. I can't go into too much detail about my other family member because, unfortunately, sort of, we don't really talk about the paranormal in my family. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit of a black sheep in terms of sort of going into this experience. But the first one that I had at my family home was it was the end of the night. I was going to bed. I was probably in my teens at this stage, late teens, early 20s. So I was going to bed, and every night I take a glass of water up with me, like most people do. Mm-hmm. But I'd forgotten it this night, and I was like, oh, I need to go downstairs and get a glass of water. So I headed towards the bedroom door, which was closed at the time. Mm-hmm. And I had the typical stereotype of stepping into a fridge, and in my mind's eye, I saw the image of an older lady, grey wispy hair, in a white nightgown, and it was only a fleeting moment. Didn't really know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. It scared me.
Sure.
And so I shook it off and went to switch the light on, which, as most people would do. At that point of switching the light on, the light bulb blew. Mm-hmm. Which, again, is another really common thing that happens. Needless to say, I went without water that night because I didn't really want to go past the door.
Yeah.
So that was my first experience, but I kind of sort of dismissed it. And then a few years later, I had the experience that involved sort of family members. Mm-hmm. And then I met a friend at work, actually, and he was already going to paranormal investigations. And from there, I went to my second investigation, actually, and then sort of joined the team that I'm with now. So I've been investigating paranormal since about 2008. The first investigation that I went to was quite a famous location called Wimmera Manor in the UK.
And I want to talk about that in just a second. I want to ask a question about what was it about that experience that really, you know, because you said, you know, you believe it until you see it. You don't believe it until you see it. But you already had some experiences prior to that. So, you know, there's something going on. What was it about that later experience that really made you go, I want to dig deeper?
Okay, so the experience that made me really curious about the paranormal was I had an okay, I'm going to have to go into the details, aren't I? The experience that I had was so it was a Monday morning. I'm at my home and nobody else is in the house at all, and I'm sort of in. Looking into the mirror, just brushing my hair, just trying to get ready for mm-hmm. work. It's 8 o'clock on a Monday morning. Mm-hmm. I had weirdest experience in, I felt like there was somebody behind me. Mm-hmm. It was a very comfortable feeling. It was a very pleasant feeling. And I turned round, smiled, and waved. And again, like the last experience, it was a very fleeting moment, but it was enough for me to sort of wonder why I'd done that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a very strange thing to do.
To just turn around and wave when you're looking in the mirror, yeah.
Yeah, there was no one there.
Like, even if there was a living person behind me, I don't know that I would turn around and wave.
You know? Exactly. It was the weirdest thing ever.
Unless you're a waving type person. Some people are huggy people. Some people are wavy people. But me, if there's someone, I just turn around like, hey, what's up? You
know? Yeah. It was the strangest reaction to having nobody in the house.
Sure.
And so it felt like I sort of stepped into a little bit of a different dimension at the time as well.
Oh, wow.
It's the only way I can describe it, really. So then I was told a little bit later on in the week, I was told that a relation had passed away, so mm-hmm. quite sad. And go on.
When you were having that experience, you turned around and waved. And yeah. obviously you had no idea of anyone passing or anything like that, but it was, you just did it. After you turned back around to the mirror and continued, you know, brushing your hair, whatever you were doing, did you have a moment like, why did I just do that? Did you know that there was somebody behind you? What was going through your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. It was 8 o'clock on a Monday morning. You know, everybody's getting ready for work.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, do I need to phone someone? Is everyone okay? Mm-hmm. What was that experience?
Yeah.
Because at the same time, I did have some feelings around that it was a friend of the family, it was male.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was a very comforting sort of feeling, very friend of the family, should I say, and very comfortable.
Were you able to, I kind of get that. I don't consider myself as sensitive by any means. I think, you know, if there's like a 1 to 10, 10 being you flat out see the dead people, 1 being, you know, you kind of, you know, you get little feelings here and there, but can't really, you know, it's basically the hair on your neck stands up. I'm more so towards the 1, but I would say when I'm around family members or people that I know, even strangers sometimes, if there's at least a little bit of interaction, there's a feeling that each person has about them. And if you walk into a room and that person is there, maybe there's a cognitive level of you see the person and boom, that triggers your mind to feel a certain way. But I think sometimes, I mean, I've had situations where I've been in a house and I don't know who else is there, and I just kind of have the feeling that so-and-so is there. Almost like the feeling you'd get years ago when you'd have a television on in the other room and it's on silent, and there's just that slight hum that no one can really audibly hear, but you know there's a TV on somewhere. And sometimes you can tell which TV is which by the hum or the frequency. I kind of feel like that with people. Did you, in that moment, have that sort of an experience of being able to identify or kind of in that your gut go, I think it might be so-and-so, and we certainly don't have to say a name or anything like that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I didn't at the time. I wasn't able to sort of know who mm-hmm. it was.
Sure.
But there was certainly an element of that it was male. It was connected. It was like a friend of the family or connected to the family. So, yeah, I mean, there was definitely, like you say, a level of energy, I suppose, that you could sense that it was mm-hmm. someone, but I didn't know who at the time.
Okay.
You just
kind of went on about your day after that?
I considered sort of ringing other family members, but then I thought about, at the time, I was like, what do I say to them?
Yeah.
I've just turned around, smiled, and waved at nothing.
Yeah. Especially if they're not that accepting of the topic. That's not like an easy phone call anytime, no matter what.
No.
It's like, hey, I saw this on TV. They don't care. But you, so were you all, let me ask you this, too. What were you, was anything going through your mind wondering, because this was a unique experience and one that you hadn't had before, was there anything in your mind saying, is there something wrong with me? Am I okay? Am I starting to, am I like having a stroke or something?
You know? That's probably actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't cross my mind massively that I was unwell, but it was definitely an experience where I questioned what had happened.
Sure.
Because I'd had the experience and sort of up until the end of the week, I hadn't really put two and two together. And I wanted to explore it. I'd already had suspicions, I think, earlier on in my life that I was perhaps maybe open or susceptible to paranormal experiences. Up to that point, I'd never had anything as concrete, I don't think.
So do you consider yourself now, kind of looking back on your life, a sensitive, an empath? What do you consider your sensitivity level or ability?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So it's something that I've tuned into, I think, over the years of investigating. I wouldn't class myself as a medium, maybe a sensitive and maybe an empath, because there are times, and we've actually sort of recently just caught some evidence that I can experience presence sort of in certain areas, and then that's when we sort of capture EVPs or have experiences. I've also had experiences where I can feel like there's somebody behind me or next to me. I don't tend to get scared, but I do get jumpy, like you would.
Sure.
If you're not expecting someone to be standing next to you, and then you get that sense that there is somebody there. So
sure. Yeah. I mean, anybody can relate to that because, you know, talking about just having that experience with a living person, like, oh my God, I didn't know you were there. Yeah. And the same could be had with someone who is deceased, a spirit or a presence, because although you may not necessarily see that presence, sometimes there's the feeling is so strong that that part is there, which makes it all the more confusing as to why am I feeling this, but you're feeling it. When you looked back and you found out what had happened later in the week and you looked back on the experience, were you at all surprised by this individual kind of making that little visit to you, or were you like, yeah, that would make sense?
Yeah, I was surprised actually, because at the time I was in a house that they hadn't visited before. I'm not even sure that they knew where I'd lived. It was quite surprising. And later on, I found out that when they actually passed was the time that I actually had the experience. So that was the pinnacle sort of moment that made me sort of really sort of go, okay, I've had this experience and it relates to this fact. I need to explore this further because, like you said before, I think I might have been questioning, well, you know, what's happening to me or what was that experience? But then, yeah, I had the experience and the fact in life. And I wanted to know more and understand more about it. Yeah.
Of all the people, you know, when you kind of contemplate this in your own shoes of like, well, when I die, What do I get to do? Do I get to go do this visit? And who would I pick? And if you feel like you were kind of, you know, like, why did you pick me to do this visit of all the people that, you know, you may want to have that interaction with? What sort of answers come to your mind as to why you think they did choose to make themselves known to you?
It's, again, a very good question. I don't really know the answer to that, but I do believe that as maybe someone who is more sensitive to experiences, mm-hmm. it may well be that they were just naturally drawn to me because they knew at some point I would be able to sort of relay that story out or communicate with them. Over the years, I think I have learned that if you can know and understand and be able to communicate with spirits, then they are more naturally drawn to people that are sensitive. I think you have more experiences. And I'm not saying that not everybody doesn't have those experiences. It's just, it seems to be some spirits are drawn to those people.
Yeah, I've heard that described almost as like a light that we give off to them, you know, almost if like you're looking at something in infrared, you'd see, you know, heat. And some areas are certainly going to be hotter than others. It's almost like, do they see us like that? Where, okay, you're dead. And now it's like, okay, well, I want to let somebody know I'm over here. And then it's like, choose your own adventure. Like, you can go over to Aunt Sally, but she's, you know, she's baking stuff and she's drinking at the same time at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And she's not going to pay attention to you. And then there's Bill, but he's out, you know, he's doing his thing. He's not going to pay attention. But there's Mary. She's going to see it no matter what. I may not have the most close relationship with Mary, but she's going to know that I'm there. Is that kind of how you think she looked at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, because I investigate with a team, and we're all sort of different types of people, and mm-hmm. some people there are there because they enjoy it. Well, we're all there because we enjoy the investigations, but sure. Some people have some experiences, some people can feel things. And yeah, I genuinely believe that there is a natural draw to certain people that can pick up the energies.
So after you had the experience, you wanted to look more into this. You got into an investigation team, and you said one of your first investigations was to a manor. Tell me about the manor itself and kind of its history before we go into the experiences that you had there.
Wimmerin Manor is an old manor that is in the south of the UK. It's been mentioned in the Doomsday Book, and it's currently owned and being developed or maintained, but the history there is immense. I think sort of 900 AD is sort of when they first mentioned it, but it's a really old building, very beautiful building. We've been there a few times. The first time that I went there wasn't actually with the group that I'm with at the moment, but I went with three other friends from work. So we went as a four, two sisters and then two friends, and we went into the location, and the team split us up into two groups. And bearing in mind this is my first investigation. Mm-hmm.
What did you know about the manor going in? I mean, obviously you knew its historical significance, but what did you know about the history, the storied history, some of the not so good things that have gone on there? What were some of those facts that you knew, so our audience also knows some of those facts?
Yeah, so actually at the time, very little.
Okay.
Because I was new to it, and I was just sort of going to an event as a person from the public.
Sure.
But since then, the building, in terms of the history, it has been It's been a school. Excuse me.
Sure.
It's been a school. I'm just trying to remember now.
Sure.
There has been a history of a monk living there who wasn't particularly nice.
Okay.
I believe that there's some morbid stories around that one, and he can be quite aggressive. There's been royalty that's lived there. It's been a while since I've been at that location. Did I say a school?
You did say school, yes.
Okay. So in terms of the history, I mean, there's lots of different reports about spirits there. And while we were there, we were talking with a caretaker who said that there was 26 spirits residing in that building.
What is it called again? I just want to look it up. How do you spell it?
Wimmering Manor. So it's W-Y. Let me just make a note of it.
Sure.
W-Y-M-M-E-R-I-N-G.
Okay. So continue on. I'm going to look at some pictures of it while you're talking about it.
Yeah, that's fine. So the first time we went there, they split us up into two groups. And it was mainly us four girls, and then there was another group downstairs. But we experienced everything from seeing a shadow figure, having items move in front of us. We had stones being thrown at us. And there was something else, but...
So when these events were happening and you had things thrown at you, you saw a shadow person, what was going on? Were you just walking around the property? Were you trying to, you know, ask something to show itself? What was going on when these events occurred?
Yeah, so the... I think we started off doing a seance. So we sat around a table and... So we started off doing a seance, just one where you hold hands. Mm-hmm. And we were sat in one of the main halls. And when we were doing the seance, we were starting to sort of get a little bit of activity. And then at the back of the room, I could see a grey figure. Again, bearing in mind it was my first investigation, I couldn't really believe what I was seeing.
Sure.
Until the lady next to me said, "Can you see that?" And my mouth dropped and sort of I nodded. And yeah, we both sort of said, "I can see a shadow figure." So we then called for him to come in. And again, the outline was of a male figure. Mm-hmm. We could see that much. We asked him to enter into the room and come and talk with us on the table. And then we started to sort of, we'd done sort of table tipping, I think, at the time, and the table started to shake and stuff. It's not something I would do so much now, but on the first investigation, that's how we done it. And then the item, the stones being thrown at us, after that investigation, we then went upstairs to another room. And again, we were calling out, and we started to ask some questions. And there's a little area where I think they had a Bible, and somebody went to go towards it, and actually a stone came out of there and was thrown out there. And we checked the area. There is no way that anyone could sort of hide in there and throw things out at us. Mm-hmm. There was nothing in there. So that was my first.
So you go out there and you have this experience, and a lot of people, when they go out, there's especially their first time or many times, very little goes on, or just yeah. enough maybe to kind of keep you curious, but not enough to be like, wow, that was pretty amazing. I mean, yeah. you actually had quite a bit happen in that one setting.
I've never had an investigation like it ever again. Because like you say, you can go out to an investigation and you can spend 5 hours in a place and not have anything happen at all.
Sure.
Obviously, being a bit more experienced now, it's still very rare to have all of that happen in one night. I mean, I'm normally quite ecstatic if I get an EVP mm-hmm. on a night, just one thing happen, and I'll be happy. But sure. To have all of that happen on my first investigation was quite something. I still sort of question it today.
Tell me more about the table tipping and how that all worked. For the audience that doesn't know how that works, and also why you feel hesitation to ever do that again.
So the table tipping was, it was a large table, and the theory behind it is that the spirits can use their energy to move the table. But for me, now, as a more experienced investigator, and I prefer to go down the scientific route, is that there's too many variables. So while you can go on with a group of people that you trust 100%, there's still too many variables in terms of, you don't know if it's just someone moving. Most of the places that we go to are cold. Somebody could be cold and moving the table and not realizing it. It just raises too many questions for me these days. But basically, I mean, table tipping is, in theory, that the ghosts can move the table and tip it in response to questions that you ask.
So you would hesitate to do it because of the scientific possible inaccuracies in it, not necessarily because of dangers in it?
No. I think it's more the inaccuracies that you would get. I don't feel that you could gain much information from it.
Sure.
I mean, yes, it could be dangerous in the sense that the health and safety side of it, but I've not known of anything in terms of sort of the spiritual side of it. But
sure. So from table tipping to more scientific methods over the years of doing this, what have you found to be some of the most accurate or maybe frequent to deliver results or communication with the other side? What sort of methods?
So at the moment, we, as a group, I work with a great guy called Andy Guy, and he has set up a very good way for us to get some baseline readings in terms of the environmental factors. So when we investigate, we measure the environmental factors. So your temperature, humidity, air pressure, EMF, and that is being monitored the entire time we're investigating. We also put out recorders across the building, really, and in the areas that we feel that we're going to investigate. And within that equipment, while we're measuring, we have found that air pressure is quite a significant factor when we're having paranormal experiences. So we've tried to develop the equipment around that, and that in turn has helped us recognize when we're having possible paranormal experiences.
That's going to wrap up the first part of our conversation. To hear the bonus part two, become a supporter of our show, a Gravekeeper, sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a Gravekeeper. $5 a month gets you access to hundreds of interviews in their entirety, all of them commercial free, as well as other bonus extras there for you. Simply thegravetalks.com or patreon.com and search The Grave Talks and sign up to be a Gravekeeper. $5 a month gets you access to all of those extras. In part two, from tipping tables to more scientific methods of communication with the dead, what are some of the most effective, according to Mary? What does air pressure have to do with communication with the dead? What message did Mary receive from the dead at Shire Hall in the UK? And what kinds of devices will we have in the future to help us better communicate with the deceased? We'll ask all that and more in part two. Like I said, to hear it, become a Gravekeeper, sign up, patreon.com, search The Grave Talks, or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a Gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.